Hello, and welcome to Home Education Today podcast. I'm your host, Chauncey Lynn Childs, and on this podcast, we talk about challenges, concerns, and joys of providing a first-class education for our children at home. We also discuss methods and experiences with successful home educators, give a voice to concerned public school teachers, and anything else that strengthens our ability to teach and guide and direct our kids as autonomous, empowered, and joyful parents. Thank you for joining me today. I hope you enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to another episode of Home Education Today. I am doing a follow-up interview today with Christy Lozano, and she's having quite an adventure in her life. And we wanted to get the latest chapter from her. So I'm just going to let you tell your story and give us an update on what's happening.
Sure. I think last time we spoke, I was running for superintendent of schools here in Santa Barbara, California.
And yeah, now the superintendent's not just over that one district, though. This is over several
county districts. Superintendent. Right. County. For all of Santa Barbara County, there's 20 districts in our county. And so that election was June 7th. And I did well in the election. I didn't win, but a third of the county voted for me. And so that's not bad considering the short campaign of 3 months and everything they tried to do to me, like sue me to get me off the ballot and, you know, put lots of false advertising in the newspapers. And we ran a really good campaign, and success is not always measured by the outcome. And I think that's a really important thing to remember, that we shouldn't always calculate success on the outcome, because for the first time in this superintendent's career, she's actually talking about literacy now, and she wouldn't be doing that if we hadn't run against her and brought up all the things that we brought up. They've changed many things on their website. She has a new job because now people are watching. And they're going to look for outcomes, because that is something, you know, no matter how good the strategy, you have to look at the outcomes every once in a while. And so many people get focused on strategy and not what is actually coming, the product coming out of it. And in our county, we had 67,000 students, and over half of them are below reading standard, 50% below the standard, and math is 2/3 below the standard. Oh, so
it's terrible. Is this something you're gonna consider doing again? Would you do it again?
Well, I actually am doing it again.
Oh,
I am running for school board of one of our elementary districts here in town. It's a small district of 9 schools, and it's a good opportunity to make a difference in an elementary level school, which I think is really important, because elementary is the formative years. And so if we can affect things in the formative years, it gives these kids a chance for a bright future. And the statistics in that district aren't much better. They're a little bit better, but the Latino population is being left behind in that district. And so I am campaigning for on the November 8th ballot for Goleta Union School District in my area. And we gained a lot of momentum from the campaign, and it actually caused about 10 other candidates to step forward and run for different districts in our area. So that's really exciting. I did an education rally 2 weeks ago, and we invited the gentleman who's running for superintendent of public instruction at the state level. That's Lance Ray Christensen. We invited him down, and he came down for our event. We also invited the new superintendent of schools for Tuolumne County, and his name is Zach Abernathy. And he won his election because of our lawsuit in Santa Barbara. I may have shared that story with you. He hired my attorney. They were not accepting his paperwork to put his name on the ballot, but when I won my lawsuit, he hired my attorney in Santa Barbara County, and he sued his county. He got his name on the ballot, and he won his election by 100 votes.
Wow.
So it's pretty exciting. Again, another win from from our race here in Santa Barbara. So we have to look at all those little wins and know that those little bits of progress are going to add up in the long run to really making a difference, I believe, in our state of California, because right now we are ranked 50th in the United States for literacy. That is last place. And we spend $24,000 per student per year.
Yeah. Now, I was watching another podcast or another YouTube channel, completely unrelated to education. And the person had a guest from somebody in California that was running for superintendent. I don't remember his name. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's kind of what triggered me to say, I need to catch up with Christy and find out what happened there. And so I looked you up and I did some research, but he was saying he was, I think he's in November he's running or something. So okay. It seems like there's different times that people run.
Yeah. Primaries are for county superintendent. If there's more than two people running in that election, like let's say there's three people running, if somebody doesn't get 50% of the vote, it will go to the November election. Mm-hmm. It can be settled in the primary, but if it's not settled in the primary, because there's, if there's two candidates, someone's going to get over 50%. But if there's three candidates and somebody does not get over 50%, it will go all the way to the November election.
Yeah.
So some of the elections are run crazy like that.
Right. Yeah. He had mentioned those statistics you just did and saying, we really have to make.
Well, $24,000 a year should buy every student a really good private school education.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So we're really seriously doing something wrong.
Well, and as you know, it's very, all of education in the United States is very administration heavy. It's just way too administration. Most of that money goes to administrative salaries. Right.
The layers have become very thick here in Santa Barbara. And, I don't know if that's to insulate the superintendent. She has all these layers between her and, the principals. But, it has exponentially gone up in the last 5 years.
Yeah. This fellow is a little aside in history. My mother and parents were both public school teachers, and they finished out their career in Valdez, Alaska.
Wow.
And my mom wrote a letter to the editor about what she felt were just out of control administrative spending in Alaska, and too much in service, and just, stop meddling, stop buying curriculum, stop. She wrote this letter to the editor that was just scathing. And I remember that, really well. And this fellow that was being interviewed on this other podcast, which I can remember his name, but he was saying, I want to, one of my goals is to reduce administration to one room. And I thought, well, he's never going to get that through. But even if he makes some progress on it, it's helpful for the kids. That money should be going to the kids.
Right. It should be. And they keep saying, well, we need help to fix the problem. That's the story in any, if you look at a school district, they will create a problem to get money. It could be special education. It could be English language learners. It could be social emotional learning. It could be, whatever, social injustices. And if you look at what they're doing is they are giving it to nonprofits. They're giving it to consultants who are their friends, and it's being funneled, siphoned out of the system to those individuals as well as administration. And the kids, our motto is every child, every chance, every day. No, that is not true. It is not about any child or any chance and none of the 7 days of the week, actions speak louder than words. And I think that this is a time when we cannot listen to anybody's words. We must look at their actions, and their actions are telling us more of what's going on than anything. And so that's what we need to do. We need to base things off of outcomes and what's actually happening.
Well, that's super exciting for you to be part of this movement, because you saying there's 10 people, at least California's a gigantic state. Oh, it's, it may seem like a drop in the bucket, but this whole system, and I've been listening to a lot of James Lindsay and New Discourses YouTube channel, and he's kind of, I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but Yeah. And just listening to, you know, the history of all this and kind of going, oh, you know, I mean, I recognized it 25 years ago because of my own personal experience. And it resonated with me that, and I didn't think of it as Marxism or anything. I just thought it's, you know, social planning gone awry or something, you know, and my kids weren't going to be part of it. And so, to have gone this far, and then I didn't care. I buried my head. I didn't need to deal with it. So now that I'm getting more exposed to it again, and it's just like, wow, you know, now it all makes sense, you know? But for people that there are so many good people in California, I think, James Lindsay was saying, you know, have faith because their agenda is very fragile.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we know when the bow will break, but our job, you know, some people think, well, I'm not a fighter. I don't want to fight. I you know, I'm not that type of person, but it actually isn't about fighting. It's about resisting.
Yeah.
It's about resisting the things that they are telling us to do or, you know, cramming down our throat or even just resisting the lies that are coming out of their mouths. It's like, no, I'm not just going to do something because you say, you know, it's sort of, they're taking advantage of the American way, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
We are built to trust and we're built to just believe what we read. And it's always been that way, but it is no longer that way. And so people have to understand this is a different, you know, it's a different skill set.
Right.
We have to develop a different skill set of looking at actions, not just what is, you know, being told to us, but actually matching the two. We can't take for granted that what someone says they actually do. And you know, it is kind of going back to our constitution, like the power lays with the people. The people have to come together.
Take
your power and do what you can do. Don't worry about what you can't do. Worry about what you can do and do it. You know, and and I think as that multiplies and more people, like I see all these people running for school boards here, and they just need people to help share their name and get their information out and put signs and, you know, little hands or lots of hands make light work.
Right.
And it has to be, which is really great because it's actually unity. It's bringing us together, you know, as we should be together as a nation and unifying our communities around good things. And, you know, I think there's a lot of positives that can come out of it, but
sure. I mean,
there's the hardest part.
You know, you think, how did we get here where, you know, this wide swath of our country, of our society has accepted that they're racist. Oh, right. You say I'm a racist. I'm a racist. I must be a racist.
You know? Where is the old, you know, if like someone pushes you, do you push them back a little bit?
Yeah. Or do you just go, oh, I guess I am. If you say I am, and they wrote a book about it, okay, and there's these experts that say it, it must be true. And we need to say, no, I don't care if you tell me that if I resist, that means I'm more of a racist. I'm not accepting that. That's just, I'm not going to. And it's even, you know, Chrissy, it's even like in your friend groups, when this stuff comes up, it's saying, no, I don't believe in that.
Right.
It's just enough. It's that's enough to get people to go, oh, somebody is rejecting this.
Right.
This philosophy. Maybe I can too. It just gives people the courage to start. And that's maybe all you need to do. Even if that's all you said, be brave enough to say that to your friends.
Right. And will it cost you something?
Maybe.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Probably. It probably will cost you friends, which I always think if it does, they weren't your friends anyway.
They weren't your friends. Yeah.
You know, so it's actually saving you from being in a bad friendship. It may cost you your job. It has cost me my job in the school district. They involuntarily resigned me. You know, I was not going to go back to the school that I was working at because they were making it a hostile work environment for me. I applied for 4 other positions in the district. They refused to give them to me. And they told me if I did not go back to my site, I would be voluntarily resigning. I said, I'm not voluntarily resigning. I'm asking you for a position elsewhere. I have seniority and I want to transfer. And they said no. And they involuntarily resigned me because I never gave them a letter of resignation. So does that hurt? Yeah, that hurts. But two things, I don't want to work in that district anyways, because it's very toxic. And it shows their true colors when you actually let the process play itself out. Does that mean that I will be justified or find justice? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But I think sometimes those are the things that we have to do, as hard as they may be, to take back at what belongs to us and to stand firm and strong and show others that, yeah, I mean, I'm still alive. I still have my health, you know, and I believe that it's going to work out for good because I have done the right thing, but it will cost us things. And, you know, it's kind of like the military that, I mean, I'm a veteran, so I understand laying down your life for your country. It comes back to those values of laying down your life for your country or your community. So we have to do that.
And you don't have any legal recourse when they simply, I mean, wasn't there something called tenure that's supposed to protect your...
Yeah, I think finding legal, somebody who will actually fight the good fight for me has been the hard part here in Santa Barbara. Wow. There's a lot of weak attorneys. I've gone to six different attorneys and nobody will take my case. So,
and your union is not helping you at all?
Nope. The union, I got out of the union about 2 years ago because I was paying them to do this to me and I couldn't justify doing that.
Gosh, that's a whole nother podcast. I'd love to talk to a lot more teachers about why they stay in these unions. I mean, I understand culturally why.
Yeah.
But really,
it's like telling somebody to leave their family, kind of, in a sense.
I know.
Like, they've made us believe this lie that if we would be sued without the union, but that's exactly what it is a lie. It's actually more dangerous to stay in the union because you are paying them to do this to you. And you don't have to stay in the union anymore. Back in 2016, they made it so people could get out clear and clean from the union. You don't have to pay any dues. And I mean, that's a huge way.
So is that federal now? That's federal?
I'm not sure if it's federal. I know in the state, probably if it's in the state of California.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I can't imagine that California would have ever voluntarily given that up.
Yeah, so they had to. And I remember when that happened because I was part of the union. I mean, I believed in the union. But, you know, after so much of getting burned by the union, I'm like, no, it's worse that we're paying them to do this to us.
Yeah, I don't have to waste my money on that.
Exactly.
Wow. So that you can't even find legal counsel to help you.
Well, I'm still looking. And I believe that if that's what the road that I'm supposed to go down, that I will find the brave souls that will do that for me. But
you got to get out of. Yeah, you probably have to get out of Santa Barbara proper.
Yeah.
Into something, a place where a little more is. I don't know. You know, I don't know where is more conservative. But
yeah, well, there's some areas in California, but it's tough. But you know, I got a job teaching at a little private school here in town, and it's a sweet little place, and it's actually interesting because it's a private school. I've never worked for a private school. I've been in the public sector my whole career, 18 years. And I actually feel sadder for public school kids because I've been doing what I do for 18 years. And I walk into this private school with these very sweet kids. They listen, they're smart, they're awake. And what takes me 3 weeks at a public school takes me 3 days at this private school.
And
it really has reinforced the damage that's being done to kids in our public sector. And so I feel sad. I've done everything I can and will continue to do.
I know. I don't understand why people, you know, I don't understand why we don't have this mass exodus and people just, and we do have a little exodus, but it's not, you know, not nearly what it should be with all that is known now Yeah. Of course, people are still burying their heads and saying, it's in fact, I just had, I was at a family reunion with my husband's side. Lovely. I love them all. And his youngest sister's from Georgia. I was talking to her husband. They have five kids in the public system down there. And he was asking me all about, you know, tell me all about this CRT and all this stuff that's going on. You know, I know it's going on in Oregon, and I have a sister in Utah that's saying it's going on really bad there. And she's been telling me all about it. What is this thing? You know? So we talked about it a little bit, and he says, oh, it's just such a shame. None of that's happening in Georgia. And I just, you know, I just wasn't up to a big discussion that at that moment, but it's going on everywhere. And people just don't want to, I mean, you know, diversity, inclusion, equity, and social emotional learning is in every school. It's in every single school, and people just don't realize what it is with the data mining, the social programming going on. They don't understand that's
right. It's very really insidious and subtle. So, you know, I've had people ask me, well, how will I know if they're doing that to my kid? Well, talk to your kid, talk to them. Don't 20 question them. Don't do it in a way that's like aggressive, but find out the things that they're learning. It's, you know, it's on a really low level of thinking, but it's training their minds to think a certain way, and it's goes undetected. And so, it's not, like you can detect it. You know, kids will think, I don't know. I always think of it as being like, you're teaching something that's bad is good and something that's good is bad. So, you know, if a boy wants to be a girl and he's in first grade and he's talking about wanting to be a girl and another boy disagrees, that boy is called a bully.
Yeah.
Which is not a bully. It's somebody with a different opinion, but they're making them think that that's a bully, you know, and the one that wants to become the girl, he gets to do that if he wants to, but, and he can slap somebody if he wants to, but if they say something, you know, sort of this backwards thinking, and they're programming these kids' minds to be backwards, upside down, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And books, I think Santa Barbara uses Lucy Calkins, which is a curriculum, and that curriculum is laced with this type of thinking. And it's in these really innocuous little books. And
so it's in math, it's in math, it's in science, it's everything. It's in your story problems. It's in everything.
Right.
Definitely.
Right. And it appears like non-threatening.
Yeah.
But it's all,
it's just like real life. It's just like, it's just like real life.
Right.
This is real life. I've done a short, you know, video from Facebook that just says, just ask your kids three questions. Is America a great country? Were the founding fathers racist? Is America a racist country? Just ask three questions and get their response.
Right.
And then you'll know.
Right.
It's just and that simple.
And at this little private school that I work at, it's a little Christian school. I hear that coming out of the kids' mouths. It's never been taught there, but they're getting it on the soccer field. And they're getting it at the baseball games, and they're getting it on the commercials, and they're getting it in the TV programs that they're watching. They are being hit on so many different levels. If parents are not teaching them, if they are not talking about it, then they are not doing their job to combat it. You know, it's like one of those things, we don't want to have to talk about it, but we have to talk about it. Even the sex ed curriculum. Those are things we don't really want to talk about, but we have to, in order to protect our kids. You have to talk about it because it's being talked about everywhere else.
Yeah. And one of the things James Lindsay was saying recently, he was saying, I can go into any school district, and the majority of the kids that are going trans and bisexual and all these different things, the majority of them are white. You're not getting that with ethnicities. He says a few Hispanics are here and there, but the majority is the white kids, because the communist mentality, I mean, like Mao, he had red personalities and black personalities. The red were good ones and the blacks were bad ones. And he identified, you know, you you by your personality. They program the kids this way. He says, this is exactly what's happening. And when you're told that you're, you know, white, straight, cisgender, you know, male, especially you're a Black personality and you've lost your identity. Mm-hmm. And they're doing this because if they can get enough kids to just figure out that they, you know, they're a Black personality, they're not cool, they're not accepted, they're bad somehow, that they will get confused. They'll have to adopt another identity, or they have to have somebody else tell them what their identity is. Completely wipes out your everything. And it's going to be super effective. You know, the males in this country are the most, the highest suicide, the most drug abuse, all, you know, not getting married. They're not having families. They're all having to take Viagra. They don't even have relationships. They just sit and play video games and look at pornography because there's no meaning in their lives anymore. This has been going on a long time.
Yeah. I actually think the dads are the ones that will save us. Like in this,
I hope so.
I think the dads, I mean, you know, the moms have to allow the dads to have their place.
Yes.
You know, the women's lib movement has, the pendulum has swung. And I think those of us women who do not believe in that, who still believe in traditional roles of man and woman, I think we can be the ones to, you know, resist that movement and give men permission to come back into their role, because they can't say it to a women's live movement woman, but we can.
We can.
Us women can. And I think that we have a job to put men back in their place, to empower them to, you know, take on their role as men, and they are the defenders of families and the defenders of women. And I, you know,
and our boys need those role models, and we need to teach our boys.
Yeah.
You must reject what society is telling you. Must reject it out of hand. All of it is wrong.
Support them in that as women, you know,
have to actively get, like you're saying, you have to be involved with your children. You have to be telling them, because there are no positive role models on TV anymore.
I think that that women have had a hand in the school. What's gone on in the schools, at least here in Santa Barbara, it's an all-woman school board.
Oh, all women.
So the social emotional and all the, you know, has really been brought in by all these women. And I don't think men would let it happen. I don't think men would support a lot of these curriculums and different things, the sex ed curriculum. And so we need our men to come back on the scene.
Well, real men wouldn't. Real men wouldn't.
Right. And I'm not, you know, and, you know, I know that they have a part, and I don't think it's totally our job as women, but I think we can help them to come back, you know. It's like a fatherless generation. We need the fathers.
Yeah, we can expect it. I think just saying, we expect you men to step up, you know. I've told my boys that. I expect you to step up. You need to do that. You need to be the example of those around you. So you went to work in a private school. And did I hear that you have some other plans, though, docket?
One other thing that I've been working on is to start a school of my own. We actually had a location, and, you know, the local media and the, I don't know, the woke, crazy
mob. Yeah.
You know, every time we get some momentum to do something, they find a way to squash it. They scare people. You know, and so we actually had a contract. We hadn't formalized it in writing, but we had a verbal contract with the United Boys and Girls Club here in Santa Barbara. And we had locations, and we had teachers we were hiring, and families that we were going to serve. Because I know for a lot of people, in order to take your kids out, you have to have a place to put them in. And not everybody, you know, has the money to afford a private school. Not everybody has the time to do a homeschool. And so we were providing something that anybody could have access to. Our goal was to turn it into a charter when we can overcome the charter bashing that's gone on here in Santa Barbara for the last 20 years. And so we were working on that, and the mobbed us. But we need courageous people to step up that don't bow to the mob when the mob wants to make a scene. And, you know, I think Santa Barbara is especially prone because so many people care how they look and what the perception is and what people think. It's sort of that vanity.
Oh, yeah. Always has been.
And I think that's over California, you know. We've got, you know, I would prefer to be respected than liked. It's why I keep doing what I do, because I have enough friends and, you know, I don't really care if you like me, but I do care if you respect me. And even though the left doesn't really like me, they do have a respect for me because I have stood up to their things and I've been successful in overcoming them. And so that's a thing, you know, it is a thing to have somebody to resist and overcome the obstacles that they put in our ways. And it takes strategy. It takes different ways of thinking, out of the box thinking. But there are people that know how to think like that. One of my good friends who helped with my campaign, he lived in Russia for 10 years. He knows the mindset.
Yeah.
And so you need people that understand the mindset. I understand the mindset too, because I have been through some pretty crazy situations in my life. And I know the passive aggressive, manipulative, psychological warfare mindset. And that's what we're dealing with. And you need people who know how to strategize against that to overcome the obstacles that they put in your way. And when you do that, you know, I think courage begets courage, you know, and so I see a lot more courage here in Santa Barbara, but we need to keep generating it. And, you know, it's exhausting.
It is. Yeah, I'm sure you are. I'm sure so. you can't be the only light bulb.
Right. Right. So I will shine. Yeah. But, you know, there are times when I need to get refreshed and filled up too. And, you know, it's kind of felt like that the second time around. I'm not quite as full of life as I was.
Yeah.
The first time.
Yeah.
I'm trying to hang it because it's really important.
It's such an important cause, Chrissy, and every little person that goes down this route, and you're not the only one, and you know, you're not.
Oh, I know.
You know, you're not. And I wonder if we should start a Facebook page or something to, you know, share stories and just support and whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not a terrible idea. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Encouragement, and people really need to hear good stories. They need to hear about wins. I think every time we hear about a win in the United States, you know, Virginia and Florida and these different places that are getting wins, I think it gives us, you know, another nudge forward to keep going, because we never know when it's going to crack.
Yeah,
they're never going to let on that they're cracking, but they might be really having to, you know, like their legs are just.
Well, and the point is though that that this has to be overcome at the local level everywhere.
Yes.
Because even though, you know, you may end up, I mean, look at how much good Governor DeSantis has done, but he's still got a long way to go, because you've got those tentacles, as who calls it, the Hydra, what another podcaster calls, you know, all this Marxist stuff. It's just, it's a Hydra. You could cut off a head somewhere, but and they're already changing the name. It's not going to be DEI anymore.
Right.
Because it's become a lightning rod. So they're going to change the name, and they're going to do it under another name. And
that's what they've done now several times.
They've done it several times.
SEL, DEI. It just morphs. It morphs into the next thing. You know, we had Just Communities here in Santa Barbara, which did 15 years of damage, and it's just morphed into all, you know, it's just, it is. And so you have to, you know, it's like de-rooting, you know, like getting all the weeds out of every little place.
Yeah. And that, every time they come up.
Yes. And that's proactive. That is being proactive. It's, you know, continuing to look once you get as much as you can. Keeping it cleaned out, you know, and we have to, We need a lot of boots on the ground for that.
Yeah, training the next generation to not drop the ball and say, okay, we're good. We're never good. Never.
Right.
Never. We're never good because this ideology has been cropping up ever since it was the French Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
It's been cropping. Marx wasn't the first one.
Yeah.
It's been probably around since Adam, honestly.
Yeah. Right. It was just something else.
So I was trying to think of the other question I was going to ask you about your school. So do you have other teachers or were you just going to take it on yourself? What grades were you going to do? Tell us about your idea.
We were going to have other teachers and we were going to try to go K through 12. We weren't getting a lot of buy-in for high school. A lot of kids, you know, want to do the sports and different things. And so, you know, we were opening it just to see what people were interested in. I think it'd be most effective at the elementary level. And, you know, probably that's where we had most of the desire for parents. But I think the elementary level is the most important age to do it at. And definitely other teachers, we were gonna, you know, it was all in the works and then it got blown up before we ever got, you know.
Because they wouldn't let you do I can't remember what the article that I read, something about.
So the
making sure you couldn't get your lease.
Yeah, the funny thing is he said he had all these complaints, but he was unwilling to tell me what all the complaints were. He was unwilling to tell me who the complainers were. And so whenever it's a situation like that, there's no transparency and there's nowhere to really go with the, you know, organization.
Yeah,
But, you know, I think sometimes I don't think anything goes to waste. And I think what I've figured out since dealing with the United Boys and Girls Club is they're not so about helping kids as you would think they are. And I smelled, I smelled woke. I smelled all the things that I smell in the school district. And so so I think it's had an effect on them. It, you know, a lot of people give money and they believe in that organization. And they were very upset that they did not fulfill that contract.
And that spreads. That definitely spreads. So so you may or may not continue to try to do that, but that's a really no. I was going to ask you, did you need any help, like in any way? Like, is there anything that aside from just, it sounds like you just had this idea and you put it together and you didn't really, I mean, how did you get funding and how did that
work? Well, we were working on funding. So for the first 2 years, we were going to have donors. We were going to go, in Santa Barbara, there's lots of nonprofits and that sort of thing and people that would want to give towards providing good, solid education. It was actually really exciting because the way that we had sort of set it up is that we wanted to value everything that we were doing, a high price on the education, but a good pay for the teachers. And if people volunteered, their volunteerism could go towards scholarships for kids and really valuing everybody that was involved in every part of the education aspect that was involved. And then to get, you know, funding sources, nonprofits, donors, or whoever to, and then even tuition, maybe paid from the families that could afford to pay tuition. And kind of a very dynamic approach to funding a school with the goal of becoming a charter school. And it's interesting how charter schools, there's lots of loopholes in the government and in education. And so we were just kind of learning about all the loopholes about how to get a charter school. If you go to a district and they deny, you can appeal to the county. To appeal to the county, we need to get a couple more people on the board. We have a couple good people, but we need two more good people in order to appeal to the county. But then there's also, there's charter schools that are starting, like we have one from like Kern County in Santa Barbara, and somehow Kern County can have a charter school in Santa Barbara, as long as it's a bordering county. And I believe we get our taxpayer money. So there's all of these weird little things that go on, but as soon as we're aware of them, we can do our research and figure out how to make it happen. So we were just investigating all the different ways that people are getting charters going, because they're still happening.
Yeah. But
there's creative, you know, in any government, there's loopholes made for, you know,
for special interests, but you can tap into them.
Right. So we
which is what that Kern County was.
Right,
somebody did well, you know, but we don't live in your county. Oh, it's okay. We'll just make it a neighboring county.
Exactly.
That's so exactly what that was.
So we were on to, you know, lots of different, you know, bunny trails, going to go figure out how to do this. But you don't have to wait to have all that in place. Like, it can be a work in progress. Our goal is to help provide something for parents and to really show what's possible in education. And so it's really fun to be in this private school working, because I can see how I actually get a chance to see how effective I really am as a teacher. And you know, that's just going to make me even more confident and more able to, you know.
Yeah, it's just experience.
Yeah.
So did you have a business plan?
We were working on a business plan. Yeah. We were working on all the details of that. And it's just on pause, you know, how life is sometimes.
Sure. So. Yeah. I just, I have an interest. I've, you know, interviewed some other gals that have done, you know, micro schools and private schools. And I just, you know, I've seen their struggles. And I would love to do a course for people.
Yeah.
I put together a simple course, you know, related to funding and, you know, state regulations, county regulations.
And we're open. Ours was a community project. So we're open to working with, you know, whoever in the community. We don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Right.
But let's I like to think of dialing it in so that it's most effective for all parties involved.
Right. I mean, there's grants out there. There's in fact, one gal in Kansas, Wichita, I think. I probably mentioned this. She started a micro school. She was a teacher. And then her first couple of meetings, she ended up with like over 100 students.
Wow.
That, you know, parents representing 100 students that wanted to be it. So she's a private school. So then she needed a building, and she found a man, a realtor, to help her find a building. And he went out and found investors for her school. I mean, you know, so it's like that's the kind of thing that should be going on all over the country.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't think people think, you know, they don't know how their skill set would play in. But like you're saying, a realtor who can find investors, I mean, she doesn't have that skill set, but the realtor does. And when we work together as a community, which is what we were appealing to, our community, it's not something I can do by myself.
Yeah,
we have the ideas, but we need the people to come into those places to help, you know, get the
word. How do you advertise to find students if you're just like, even if you've moved to a new area and you haven't been in teaching for, I mean, you know, there's all these situations. I just would love to put together a course to, you know, help people and put people in touch with investors and, you know, like you're saying, how do you get this started? And a lot of people just don't know how to get it started. How do you find a building? How do you, you know, all this stuff. So that I just was asking you those questions, thinking that maybe I could tap you a little bit too later and we could talk about how you brought that together.
Yeah. I mean, we use, you know, the media. We have one newspaper here in town that's on our side, and they've been great about press releases and advertising, putting articles in the newspaper. And that's been one of the biggest helps. Santa Barbara is a small enough place that word of mouth still is, you know, it still works very well. And I think the hardest part is the people putting the stops, and then everyone's like, well, what do we do now? You know, and appeal, but you know, I don't know. Maybe we just Maybe the timing's not right. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's so tribal these days. And truly, if you are a person that's really bought into the public system, you really believe in that system. I mean, as you know, you were in it for a long time. It's it's part of your identity. And sometimes I get into discussions with teachers who, you know, it's really starting. I'm not going to use the word trigger, but I'm just really annoyed by teachers that get on and call everybody a racist if they don't buy into all this woke stuff. Right. And you realize, you know, when you criticize the system, well, if we don't have public schools, then our children won't be educated. We aren't investing in the future. I'm like, it's a very either or mentality. There's many ways to educate children.
Right.
Very effective ways. It's not public school or nothing.
Right.
You know, but when you say that, it's like, you're attacking me, you know, as a teacher, they think you're attacking me because I'm part of the system. Well, you need to think and look about what's going on there and decide if that's really what's to just be criticizing everything about our society, about every white person and about all of our history and saying like, there's never anything good that's ever come of this country. Is that good for our society? I mean, please just think about it. Where does this end?
Right. Right. And, you know, people that have come to the United States for the American dream, there's a plenty
They're looking around going, what happened? What's going on here? They do not get what's going on.
Right. They don't, because they came and they have benefited and they're super grateful. And I don't know if it's a sort of an entitlement attitude, I suppose. I don't know if people just take for granted what they've been given. I'm not sure, but and school is not like it was when we were in when we were in school. I don't know if it's really hard for people to come out of that thinking. They know what school's like because they've been there. It is nothing like
what
feels so bad for these kids and what they have to go through in school.
That's a big problem.
Any adult spend a day on a campus, maybe that's what they should go do. Go spend a day on a campus and watch what goes on. Watch how hard it is for the teachers. Watch how hard it is for kids that want to learn. You know, go watch what happens on the playground. There is so many mean, it's like the meanest recess game you've ever, you know, seen goes on all day, every day.
Yeah.
The schools.
And why would you put your children in that environment and say they just have to tough it out? It's just real life.
Right. What?
Are you doing that in your real life? Like you're in this toxic environment all day? No, you know, you get out of that kind of thing.
It's wearing. You quit
that job or you move from that neighborhood or you get out of that church or whatever it is. Right. You don't stay in environments like that. Why do we make our kids do it?
Right.
Well, you're a super, super brave lady. And I hope it doesn't bother you to say you're in my prayers.
No, not at all. I appreciate it.
Want you to succeed, you and all the rest that are trying so hard to do something for kids. And I know that's where your heart is, that you just want to, you want to help kids, you know, and you love this country.
Yeah. So, and I want it to be a positive experience for teachers, for parents, for families.
Yeah.
You know, the school has always been there to support the family. And if the family is struggling, the school can help with that, you know?
Can.
That should be a partnership.
It definitely should. Yeah.
So it'd be awesome if we could get back to that.
I know. We're going to do it.
All right.
I'm doing what I can.
Let's do what we can. That's all right. That's all that can be asked.
That's right. All right, my friend. It's great talking to you. And we'll touch base later.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye.
Hey, thanks so much for listening all the way to the very end. By listening to the entire podcast, you've proven yourself to be the kind of person that is forward thinking. And you're concerned about our current culture. And you also believe that you can change the world. I believe that by having these simple discussions that we can really make a big difference in the world, really have an impact. And I hope that you'll share this information with others so that together we really can make a positive change.